Welcome to Legal Tea, the podcast where interview lawyers bring beyond corporate law. Each week you'll hear about their practice area, the work that they do, and the roads they've taken to get there. I'm your host, Max Herberg. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another week of the podcast. This week, we're going to be focusing on the world of insurance, sitting down with none other than Rachel Farnworth, a defendant insurance solicitor at Clyde & Co. and former president of TFOIL, Tomorrow's Forum of Insurance Lawyers. Rachel specializes in the defense of employers and public liability claims in the retail, leisure, transport, and logistics sectors with regards to insurance. In the episode, we deconstruct what insurance law is, the long-term impact of COVID and technological innovation on the area, and the career opportunities and support offered by TFOIL to insurance lawyers. But that's not all. Outside of insurance, we discuss the importance of embracing the process in one's career journey, the power of communication, and finally, championing social mobility. So, without further ado, sit back, relax, brew yourself a cuppa, and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Legal Tea Podcast. How are you doing today, Rachel?
Hi, Max. Great, thanks. God, it's Friday.
I know. There's no greater feeling than waking up on the Friday morning and knowing that you've got the whole weekend ahead of you. So tell us about your... So first off, thank you for coming onto the podcast. For our listeners that don't know you, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I'm a defendant insurance solicitor with around 9 years experience. I specialise in the defence of employers and public liability claims for insurers and companies. The specific sectors that I cover include leisure and retail, manufacture, transport and logistics. I'm also a social mobility mentor and a dementia friends champion.
And so let's start with kind of insurance. How would you define insurance law?
So insurance is the act of indemnifying risk caused to another person. So we deal with anything from specifically myself, I deal with public and employers' liability claims. So that can be anything from an employee who is injured in their workplace to an individual out in public. So any sort of injuries.
So essentially, when anything goes wrong, the insurance is all about the case of whether to pay or kind of indemnify against that harm or loss.
Yes. So insurance will react to that. So if an accident happens, the company, the individual who is the insured party, will then contact their insurer, who then appoint a solicitor who deals with that insurance. But insurance law can cover various aspects from, you know, environmental law, contracts sometimes, because we have to obviously what the contract is in terms of the insurance, also covers, you know, motor, healthcare, anything that is a risk has insurance, and insurance lawyers will deal with that risk.
And with that said, because even in the beginning you talked about kind of the sectors that you specialized in, as an insurance lawyer, do you consider yourself a kind of generalist or a specialist?
I would say a specialist in respect of the specific area in which I work in insurance, so employers and public liability claims, but a generalist in the sense that we can be dealing with anything from an accident in a manufacturing environment to an accident out on the street for a local authority. We can be dealing with mass class action litigation with chemical exposure. This means that we have to understand certain processes and machinery which you may have never come across before. So earlier this week, I was actually visiting an insured who manufactures tyres. And obviously, that's something that you may have never ever come across, the machines that make the tyres, but an individual may be injured when they're working on that machine, or there may be, a subcontractor that comes in and is injured on that machine. You've got to understand the manufacturing process in order to respond to that claim. So we do look into various areas of the law and various areas really in terms of the world. It can be absolutely anything. So one day, as I said, you could be working for a manufacturer, and another day you could be working for a local authority.
That's fascinating. I mean, I'd never really think twice about the process of manufacturing tires, but I'd imagine, kind of as you were saying, as an insurance lawyer, you also need to understand necessarily the business or the process behind that and how that resulted in a harm. How do you feel about that when you have to kind of go into the nitty-gritty detail of, say, on the one hand, you've got the law, but also in terms of the business or the action or what happened?
That's probably one of the most exciting things, because we get to, we might get to see an aeroplane being made. If we act for a company that makes aeroplanes, we may, we it's crazy the things that we have to understand, but it also makes it really, really exciting. So we may go into things such as, understanding scaffolding and how scaffolding's put up, because you have to understand how it's put up correctly and how it should be taken down correctly if somebody is injured on that scaffolding, or the build process and things like that. So yeah, it's just a vast amount of areas, which makes it really exciting in terms of the work that I do, because you have to understand those processes. And obviously every day is different, every case is different, therefore.
And another question I had is the difference between insurance and reinsurance.
So, as I mentioned earlier, insurance is the act of indemnifying the risk caused to another person. But reinsurance is when the insurance company takes up insurance to guard itself against the risk of loss.
So in that sense, it can be a sense of there could be multiple layers to kind of an insurance. I mean, how would you call it, an insurance relationship, or kind of, the
Yes,
insured
definitely.
risk?
So yeah, definitely. So that there are different layers in that sense. So, you may have, I'm just trying to think of an example, really. Yeah, you can have different layers of insurance, in the sense that reinsurance is that the insurance company takes out insurance to cover its own risk. So I can't think of an example off the top of my head.
And but would it normally be, I mean, I'm just thinking about this, and I remember kind of law school when they talked about, an indemnity chain. And so is it that, there can be multiple levels of reinsurance such that it becomes this kind of long chain, or is it usually just an insurer, gets reinsured and then it stops the buck at that kind of second insurer?
Well, in the area where I work, it's generally just a company individual has insurance, and then that insurance reacts to the risk. I haven't come across a case that there's reinsurance just specifically in my area.
Fantastic. One of the things, kind of talking about insurance, one of the big things that, feels like eons ago, in some aspects, but feels just like yesterday, is COVID, and kind of, the unprecedented scale of the pandemic, and how much it changed our life as we know it. Now, I was wondering what impact COVID has had on kind of the insurance sector, insurance law, in the post-pandemic life we live in now.
The impact on general insurers will vary depending on the products and the types of coverage offered by that insurer. So the pandemic obviously took its toll on premiums on certain lines of businesses, such as travel, events. Other lines of business, such as motor, home, etc., have remained relatively stable. Claims volumes for personal lines, such as motor, have decreased due to obviously the lockdown. You also have to think of things such as business interruption claims. So a lot of businesses were closed, such as restaurants, etc. So they some businesses obviously have to look to their insurance to help see them through that period. And we also look at health insurance as well. So the impact on the mortality rate that COVID had and the impact that that's had therefore on health insurance and health insurance claims. In terms of wider ongoing issues, we have to think about things such as the risk of the shift in risk. So long term, we've got things like, from drivers to artificial intelligence and software behind self-driving cars. And we have to think about how insurance companies adapt to new risks, such as satellites, drones, even e-scooters. We've got all sorts of things that come up, and change and change generally with society, but also the impacts that obviously the pandemic has had.
That's actually kind of leads right next to my next question is on the one hand, rapid advancements in technology present kind of new risks, as you were saying, with self-driving cars and now kind of e-scooters being kind of trialed across the country. Is there kind of, the flip side of that coin? Has kind of the insurance sector taken advantage in some ways of the rapid advancements in technology?
Yeah, so operations are obviously streamlined, customer interactions are done via chat, or claims can be processed automatically, and brokers are seen to aggregate all their information to work faster, more accurately. A lot of firms and insurers are looking, so law firms that act for insurers are developing technical solutions for clients, such as analysing the value of the claim and things like that. So I work for Clyde & Co, and we've got Clyde & Co Newton, which helps digitalise key processes and gives easy access to our expertise, provide sort of future innovation, things like that. And we develop tools for the casualty market as a way of, as I said, sort of analyzing the value of claims and things like that. So yeah, we obviously do have the advancement in technology, and firms have to adapt to that, and insurers have to adapt to that as well. One of the huge things that obviously comes with COVID and hybrid working is cyber risk solutions. So cyber risk, if people are working at home or hybrid working, we're all using laptops, we're all using Wi-Fi, etc. We really have to look at the impact that has on cyber risk. So then again, we've got it's just developed actually. I think it's called One, which is like a cyber risk solution to respond to any cyber breaches, things like that, and just be ready with an incident response if there's any sort of
Yeah,
cyber issue.
that's fascinating because I didn't really think about it. But obviously, with remote working, everyone is kind of logging in from home through their own kind of Wi-Fi. You have just,
Yeah.
a greater amount of variables than you did kind of when everyone was working in the office with kind of, the work Wi-Fi and, the IT systems in place. But you go home and obviously, you're more susceptible to kind of, having a cyber breach, given that one person's Wi-Fi is less reliable or
Yes, definitely.
something of that nature happens. So that's quite fascinating.
Yeah, and that is something that insurance looks at again, because if they will have insurance, a lot of companies will have insurance to cover cyber risk, and therefore if there's some sort of, cyber issue, then the insurance will respond to that, and we may have to deal with that.
And so talking about kind of insurance, as an insurance lawyer, what does your day-to-day look like? Because at the beginning of the interview, you discussed how just recently this week you were kind of visiting a client, an insured kind of manufacturer and tires. So it sounds like, there's variability in what you do on a week-to-week basis.
Definitely. Litigation is fast-paced. So as a defendant practitioner, I'm reactive to the claimant's actions, and we must comply with tight court deadlines. So my week or day can be anything from conducting site visits, carrying out incident-related investigations, drafting defences, witness statements. We often arrange and instruct experts, negotiate with other solicitors or attend court hearings. That can be obviously telephone case management hearings or attending trial on matters that you've handled from inception.
And do you like that? Do you enjoy that variability that each week or even kind of each day can be different on the job?
Yes, that's what I absolutely love about litigation. They say you're either a litigator or you're not, and you realize that when you as you gain experience, you it is very, very fast paced. And as I said, you do have court deadlines, and if you miss a court deadline, that could be a real serious issue. So you have to be on the ball.
And with that, kind of, which is what has been kind of the highlight moment on the job so far for you?
It's really just obtaining great results for clients. So that generally is mostly attending trial, but it's not actually always winning the case. So it's learning from ev every aspect of the litigation process. So you can attend trial on a matter, but it may be a matter where quantum has been agreed, but then you have a joint settlement meeting, which is actually before trial, where you actually negotiate a really, really good outcome for the client and the claimant. And it's more that you can see, you can follow a case from inception. So when the accident's happened, and we do have notifications specifically in our regulatory team where an accident may have just happened. They go out, they investigate it, and then we see it right through to the pro right through the process, right through to trial. And that's probably the best part of my job in terms of actually following what happens. And you may have numerous medical reports and court hearings and things like that, and you can just actually see the process.
And talking about kind of, the court process and kind of going to trial, I'm just kind of brushing up on my LPC knowledge from about a year ago now. But is there, I know from kind of the LPC from how the so procedure works is that there are multiple kind of incentives to try and kind of settle out of court. So my next question is, do you find, litigation with respect to kind of insurance claims that you go to kind of, you end up going to trial a lot, or does it settle, or are most kind of claims settled outside of court, or is there a mixture?
I would say there's a mixture. A lot has changed since. So as you progress and deal with litigation, you'll realise that the rules did change, and we now have fixed costs in terms of lower value fast track matters. So I did see a shift at that time in terms of practitioners were more willing to push claims to trial because we are aware of the risk in terms of fixed costs. So we know what we're going to pay the other side should the case continue. And most of the time, by the time you have witness exchange, you've spent most of the money anyway because you have the fixed costs, and it's more or less the same amount that the claimant's solicitors will receive if they then proceed to trial. So you know the liability at that stage. In terms of cases, I would say that most cases don't get to trial. So they're either settled or the other side withdraws the claim. We don't really have that many trials. It ultimately depends on the work that you do, but most cases ultimately don't get that far.
And so, what got you into insurance law?
So I completed my degree, and then I hadn't obtained a training contract. I graduated during the economic crisis, so it was quite difficult at that time. I didn't have any experience, so I left university and applied for a paralegal job at a law firm just to sort of get my foot in the door and gain experience and also save up the money to then pay for my legal practice course. So I was placed in the occupational health team, and you could say the rest is history. So I just worked as a paralegal, and that was the area that I was placed. And then I studied my legal practice course in the evening whilst I was working full time as a paralegal. So I did the evening course. It was like an 18-month LPC. So yes, but insurance litigation, so during my training contract, you're obviously placed in separate seats. So I did other seats, etc. But I always came back to litigation and insurance, and occupational health, sort of ELPL law, because it is one of the most exciting and challenging areas because it's fast-paced and contentious. So that was the aspects that I enjoyed. Non-contentious aspects such as like wills and trusts, I did really enjoy that, but it hasn't got the same contentious, fast-paced vibe that insurance law has.
I mean, it sounds like you're in it for the adrenaline almost, just the contentious nature.
Yes, it is a little bit because you have to do contentious and non-contentious. I don't know if this has changed now with the new exams, etc. But when you are, in order to qualify, when you were doing the LPC and the traditional training contracts that I did, you had to do a certain amount of time in a non-contentious seat. And you obviously, I think it's really important to do those other seats and not put yourself in a box. And even if it's something that you don't think you'll enjoy, give it a go because there'll be skills that you gain from that experience that you might have never gained. So, I actually was put in a childcare seat when I was doing my training contract, and I was terrified. I thought, "Oh gosh, childcare!" But the experience that I gained from that was invaluable. So childcare, they work on 26 weeks. So the litigation process obviously has to be really fast paced because you have a child involved. It's all about protecting a child, and you may act for the local authority or for a parent in childcare issues, and in that sense, I was always at court, and I was always dealing with a variety of individuals. So the experience that I gained from that was invaluable to the work that I now do. And as I said, in a lot of cases, you may not get to trial on, insurance law, depending on what area you work, you may have never been to trial. So it's actually really good to have that court experience, and that's what I gained from that seat. So I do think, in terms of when you're in your early stages of your career, it is really important to give everything a go and not just say, "Oh no, I won't like that," because actually you may love it. If you've never had any experience, you may hate it, but you may love it. And even if you hate it, at least you know you hate it at that stage, and you won't do it for the next 15 years of your life or 30 years, etc. So it's much better. Yeah, that would be one of my things to sort of students to just give everything a go and gain that experience.
Yeah, that's such valuable advice. I mean, kind of, don't knock off a seat because there's bound to be at least some transferable skills that you'll take along with you. I mean, I feel, halfway in my second seat now, my training contract, I'm daunted by the aspect of, that you've got kind of two, I've got two more rotations, and then after that, I've got to, choose a department that I want to qualify into when you've got, say, 15 odd, say, departments. And it's kind of like, okay, well, which one do I choose? And what if I don't get the one that I want? But, having that advice of, it's one which you might end up enjoying, even if you don't know you want to, even if you don't think it's for you. And then two, that even if you don't enjoy it, they're bound to be kind of, things that you take away from it.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. It's much better as well. You do have a lot of individuals who have started in a particular area, they're not wanting to try anything else. And it's much. And if you do different seats in departments that you may never come across, you may think you never come across in the future, if you stay at that firm, actually, you might need that person and, you might need that advice. We have claims where. So I just deal with the litigation process in terms of ELPL, but we may have an insurance policy where the company has not notified the insurer of the accident. And what happens there, we send it to our team who deal with coverage issues. So they may then look at it and they may deny coverage, etc., or advise our client on the coverage. So I know individuals from that team. In that sense, so if you have different seats in different areas, you get to know your colleagues in that area that actually you may have a query for in the future. So it's always good to know them anyway.
Another question I wanted to ask is, you began with
telling us how you got into insurance law by, giving us the situation that out of uni, kind of you weren't with a training contract and you took up a kind of paralegal position. I feel nowadays, with university students, there's that overwhelming sense of pressure that you need to get a training contract during uni. Kind of, throughout your 3 years, it's kind of first year of law school. I remember in Freshers Week myself, barely having opened my criminal law legal textbook, and I was already inundated with the idea that, I had to apply to kind of vacation schemes or first year schemes, because out of that there'd become a training contract. With a training contract, then right after university, you'd do the LPC and then you'd start your training contract. And it kind of it saddens me because it feels that it puts the immense amount of pressure on students to get a training contract. And if they don't get a training contract by the time they graduate, there's this sense of kind of failure, the sense of, not having made it. And I just wanted to get kind of from your perspective for the audience, kind of, the value of time, of taking your time, and as well kind of the value of say, okay, well, I haven't gotten a training contract out of uni, but I'm kind of, going to take up a paralegal position, and looking back, whether kind of that time as a paralegal has also added to your va added value as to when you were doing your training contract.
Most definitely. Absolutely. So by the time I came to do my LPC, the civil litigation module, I already knew most of it because I was practicing in that area. And actually, so I have a friend at the moment who's doing her LPC, but she was our paralegal in our team and she's coming back as a trainee. So she did paralegal in, she's gone off to do her LPC and then he's coming back. And she said to me, actually, most of the things that you learn it. I know that it doesn't happen like that in practice. So you're so much more advanced if you gain that experience. And if you've never worked in an office environment before, you've never worked 9 to 5, because going from university to then working Monday to Friday 9 to 5, that is hard. That is hard. It is a hard transition. So even just that is really beneficial. But I think from my perspective, so I started as a paralegal, did my LPC, and by the time I came to qualify, I already had 5 years experience, over 5 years experience. So I just think that it really put me ahead of the game in terms of I was qualified, but I had so much experience to bring to the role that, I knew what I was doing essentially a little bit from the perspective of the department that I worked. And I just think it's absolutely invaluable. And also there's different routes to qualify now. Please do not put pressure on yourself. There is, you can do the Silex, you can even apprenticeships now in the legal sphere. Are much, much better than when I graduated from university. And I think gaining that experience will, one, let you know if you really want to do it, and two, will put you ahead of the competition, most definitely. And you are more likely, I think, to succeed because you understand the business, to succeed in terms of applying for a training contract because you understand the business much better because you've had that experience. You know individuals in the firm, you can be involved in other things in the firm that will get you to know, what they're doing in the future, what their plans are, etc. So even in terms of applying for a training contract, you have that benefit of being ahead of the competition. And I think really looking back when you mentioned the pressure of when you're at university. So I did attend a red brick university and there was real pressure, oh, apply for a training contract in your second year. And I did have a couple of VAC schemes and training contract assessment centres, but at that time, I was competing with individuals who had already done their LPC, who had experience. And I look back now on the assessments that they gave me. So in terms of, written assessments, God knows what I put on those forms because I didn't have any knowledge in terms of drafting skills, even legal knowledge. Your degree is so different to what you learn in practice. So in during your degree, you learn essentially the law, and during your LPC, or if it's called something different now, I'm not sure, you learn how to apply that law, and it is entirely different. And in practice, you learn those skills that can set you up for the LPC. So most definitely, I would say gain the experience. One, it'll tell you whether you really want to do it and what areas you're interested in. And two, it will put you ahead of the competition.
So you're also the president of Tefoil. I was wondering if you can explain to us what Tefoil is and what it stands for.
So, FOIL is the Forum of Insurance Lawyers, and TFOIL is specifically the division that represents solicitors of 0 to 5 years PQA. So FOIL acts as the representative voice of defendant insurance community, and TFOIL is the division that runs learning and social events for solicitors of 0 to 5 year PQA, helping them build relationships with fellow practitioners and insurance professionals.
And so with kind of Tefoil, for kind of young lawyers, what opportunities does Tefoil offer kind of insurance lawyers just starting out?
So one of the challenges post-COVID is really how young lawyers can thrive in a hybrid working environment. And that touches on anything from keeping up with changing legislation, sort of training and development, and building relationships with other practitioners, your firm, and clients. And FOIL touches all those aspects and can assist junior lawyers in that. So I sit on various executive committees that monitor change in legislation and provide lobbying, education, networking, things like that to support young lawyers and the insurance industry. So we liaise with fellow practitioners, government departments, and regulators. And FOIL are involved in things like consultation responses, writing articles, leading and attending roundtable events on changing policy and legislation. So it's really that, we provide the insight into the change in legislation, but also the networking for young lawyers. Being involved in FOIL really also allows me to seek out shared interest beyond my own area of responsibility, and offers personal development in a variety of those areas. So, as I mentioned previously, we've got sort of different aspects that cover, environmental law, different changes in legislation that don't specifically impact my area, but it is important to know and be aware of those so I can, obtain information on climate change, etc.
That's amazing. I mean, not only is it kind of from what it sounds like you're telling me, not only is it a community in the aspect of, a community of lawyers and with Tefoil, a community kind of relatively young lawyers, but it's also kind of an organization in the sense that not only do you help each other, but the organization as a whole kind of helps everyone in terms of, as you were saying, kind of keeping updated with the law, but also discussions on kind of policy change. Would
Yeah,
you
most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. So I know partners, practitioners from other firms, and we deal with, consultation responses and change in legislation. And then I also we do have an insight into clients as well. So yeah, there's definitely in terms of the challenges post-COVID and changing legislation, training and development, and building those relationships, which are really difficult, I think, in terms of hybrid working. That's what Tefoil offers.
One of the things we discussed in one of our previous discussions was the idea of young insurance lawyers. And, one of the objectives of Tefoil is, showing to young insurance lawyers out there, but also to kind of lawyers out there that insurance law is there and, that there is a source of support. And so I was wondering if you could tell us why do you think there aren't as many young insurance lawyers in the market?
I mainly think it's to do with how we are set up from a university perspective. So I think there's a huge emphasis, and I think you mentioned criminal law there. If you're interested in criminal law at university, there's not really much assistance, there's no help really for you. And it's the same with other aspects. I think there's this huge emphasis on commercial law and commercial aspects of law, contract, etc. And I think students do think, oh, that's where the big bucks are, and that's what I'm sort of being pushed towards. So it kind of takes you away from other areas. And I think modules in that aspect are set up like that as well. Because I know a couple of people who were interested in criminal law, and there was just not really much that they had to sort of seek it out themselves, rather than, a lot of events are concentrated on commercial law without considering other aspects.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I mean, one of the things I always like to say on this show is that, when you go to a law fair, the question isn't, what area of law do I want to specialize in? It's what type of commercial firm do I want to get into? And it just shows that disproportionate amount of representation, even as you were saying with kind of law modules. I mean, from my university degree, there wasn't an insurance law option, but at the same time, it sounds like such a fascinating area in terms of, just the wide range of sectors, so to speak, but also just the all the areas of law that are involved in it, kind of, the contentious and non-contentious aspects of it. So it'd be, I'm fascinated that there just isn't that kind of representation at a young kind of lawyer level.
Yeah, but when you say there wasn't any, this is the misconception, I think, when you say there isn't any modules covering specifically insurance, but there's always a module that covers ELPL, personal injury. So you probably have done that in environmental law, insurance impact that, motor, things like that. There are definitely areas that cover insurance law, but I don't think people realize that is the area that you work if you like that aspect of the law. It falls under insurance.
And so, what skills do you think make a good insurance lawyer?
I would say preparation, organization, negotiation, and personal skills. There's also that word that's always batted about, and you've probably heard a million times whilst you're at university, commercial awareness. It is important to enable lawyers to understand their client's solution and make sound business judgments. So you can have a case that you have to make a decision on, which may impact the wider business. If you settle a case, for example, you do have to consider the policy considerations, opening the floodgates, things like that. So you always have to understand the environment in which your client works or the business operates. So the insured company, you all always have to understand that environment that they work. So commercial awareness is also important, but definitely preparation, organization, negotiation, and also personal skills. But I think generally being a lawyer, you have to have personal skills, because what a lot of people don't realize is that it is sort of a face-to-face business. You are speaking with individuals quite a lot. You may speak to the insurer. So I may speak to a claims handler today. I may also speak to an MD of a company or the health and safety director, but I may also deal with the claimant solicitors. So you have to be able to have those personal skills, to just be able to pick up the phone and have a chat with somebody.
And that's, do you find that, because one of the things as kind of law students and you think about is when discussing kind of, with different people, with all those different parties that you mentioned, do you feel that your style of communication has to adapt to, whether you're talking to the claims handler or where you're talking to kind of the managing director?
Yes, most definitely. But most people just want they want a complicated issue explaining in the most simple terms. So you, of course, you have to be able to communicate that with an individual. And the ultimately, an insured may not understand the litigation process, so you have to break that down in terms of explaining the next steps of the litigation process. Right, well, now we have to look at obtaining witness statements and things like that. So of course you have to adapt your communication skills to the situation, but ultimately just be yourself. Just be yourself and try and explain things in the most clear and concise way as possible.
I feel that's been one of the biggest shocks since I left university. Is at university, I always felt, the need to use kind of eloquent language and, use specific vocabulary to really heighten kind of, an essay investigating kind of, theories of law. Whereas now in practice, it's a lot more, be concise, be articulate, try and break it down. And it kind of shows that more human side of law. At the end of the day, the law or kind of working in law is, working with just other people just like me and you. And so you don't, nobody's looking for those 2,000 or 4,000 word essays with highly stylistic vocabulary. And people just want, as you were saying, complicated issues, broken down in kind of simple terms.
And if you explain it in crazy language that nobody can really understand, nobody's really going to know what they need to do next or really what their risks are, etc. If you don't break it down. And it's much easier to do if and it does create a better relationship if the client understands what you're doing and why you're doing it, or the insured, the company understands what you're doing and why you're doing it, they're more likely to have a good relationship with you. But if they just think that you're a lawyer that just is crazy and gives them these big words that they don't really understand, they're going to be uncomfortable with the process. So that's where the personal skills come in at. Isn't it?
One topic I wanted to kind of address, and you mentioned it at the beginning of this interview, is social mobility. At the kind of you mentioned also in your interview that you were working as a paralegal as a way as well to kind of save up money for kind of the legal practice course. And one of the biggest kind of things with I feel with the law is this idea that you need to kind of to go to the right kind of sixth form, you need to go to the right university, you need to kind of have, the training contract secured kind of during university. Otherwise, you won't make it, or kind of it's not meant for you. And I was wondering kind of in the social mobility work that you do, whether you can kind of, share some words of wisdom to people who feel kind of confronted or kind of intimidated by the idea.
Yeah, I think it's that sort of feeling like you don't belong there, isn't it? And I've had that. You can probably tell from my strong Mancunian accent. I'm from a single parent family in North Manchester. I didn't know any lawyers. I had nobody really that went to university or furthered their education. So it was a complete, different environment. And I often said early on that, I work in an environment that I wasn't born into. But you just have to expose yourself to it a little bit and think, this is what I want and this is what I'm going to do. I think I'm just really, really determined, I think, more than anything. But I do work with the Social Mobility Foundation in Manchester, and social mobility is a big thing for me. Believe it or not, when I actually applied to university, to do law, I didn't even know you had to do a training contract. So that's how much I didn't know. I thought, oh, right, well, I'll just come out of university and I'll get a job and I'll be a lawyer. It'll be brilliant. And little did I know. So we do work with, guiding students from those lower socioeconomic backgrounds, to, assist them in applications and what they need to do to move forward. So my family wouldn't have been able to afford for me to complete the LPC. So I obviously got my job and then as a paralegal and saved up and did my LPC in the evenings. And actually that shows real resilience and something that you do need in life. And so yeah, I think social mobility is a big thing now, and is becoming a big thing in terms of diversity and things like that. And going back to what we said about, speaking eloquently and things like that, actually, most of the businesses that I deal with are just normal people, and they just want me to speak to them normally. And that's where my background really comes in. I I can just talk to them on a level that's, this is what you need to do and this is the next steps. So I think social mobility is really, really important, and there are a lot of schemes out there in terms of the Social Mobility Foundation, and there's a lot of things now that firms are doing on the social mobility sort of work, with even starting from sort of school age now and working with those schools maybe in lower socioeconomic background areas to help them progress in the legal world. But please do not have that, you know, please do not feel that you can't do it because, you know, you don't know anybody in that area, or you don't have the knowledge, because it is all out there now, and actually it's a lot more accessible because of computers, etc. And a lot of firms do have schemes now that can assist you in moving up. And as I said, you can even start now as an apprentice really early on if you maybe don't fancy, even if you don't fancy university, or don't feel that your family has the ability to send you to university, that you can start as a paralegal, an apprentice, and work your way up. And actually, when you qualify, you've then been in the business such a long time that you know everybody, you know, you're happy there. So there is a lot of routes out there now, even if you come from the background such that I came from.
Would your 16-year-old self, kind of looking back, see you as a superhero?
No, not really. No, no. I always had my older brother. He's really big into business, and he actually, it's strange, he did his degree, but I think when I had already finished mine, but he was always really, really encouraging. And, you know, he always said, oh, be a doctor, because I had science A-levels, and I thought, oh, it's not for me. And luckily I really, really worked hard and had really good results, and was able to get into a sixth form college, which then led me to the route of applying to university.
And so this leads me to kind of our next question. If there's one thing you want the audience to take away from today's conversation, what would it be?
It would be to have a look at other areas of law, be open to opportunities such as insurance law, meet with practitioners, gain experience. Insurance law, we obviously have solicitors that specialise in insurance law, but they have a stable career. So there's many opportunities to move around the insurance market, and there's a large variety of work available. So yeah, get out there, be open to opportunities, and meet with practitioners and gain experience.
Now, we've gone through kind of insurance law, we've gone through the life of insurance lawyer, we've talked kind of inspiration. I always like to end off these interviews with a bit of a kind of a lighthearted note. And so my question to you, Rachel, is who's your favorite dramatized legal character on a TV or movie, and why?
I would say, I don't know if you've ever seen Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
So there's a character called Jimmy McGill. Or his professional alias is Saul Goodman. And he's sort of an Irish-American criminal defence lawyer. I really like him because he always comes up with a solution for his clients, even if it's completely out of the blocks. He always has a solution for his clients. So, yeah, that's a bit of a jokey one, but he's a really good character, Jimmy McGill. He sort of attends court, is there for his clients, etc. So I would say him.
A fantastic choice. I'm a huge fan. I don't know if you watched the end of the show. I think it was a couple months ago.
I've got a couple of episodes I still need to watch, actually. I've just been on holiday, so I haven't caught up. And there's so much on now, isn't there, in terms of, you know, Netflix, etc. So, no, I haven't seen that. There's a couple of last episodes of the most recent series of Better Call Saul.
Well, I won't spoil anything then. Well, Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. One final question. You know, if any of our audience members want to reach out to you with any follow-up questions, can they? And if so, how?
Yep. I'm on LinkedIn. Just have a look at Rachel Farmworth and you'll probably find me on there. So pop me a message on there, or of course, just pop me an email, which is just rachel.farmworth@clydeco.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, Rachel.
No problem, Mark. Thank you.
Well, that's the show, folks. If you enjoy learning about insurance law and want to know more, feel free to reach out to Rachel. We've linked her LinkedIn profile in the show notes below. Enjoying our exquisite brew? Have a knack for social media marketing or podcast editing? And are an avid tea drinker? Come work with us on Legal Tea. Send us an email at hello@legaltea.uk or DM us on our social media platforms @legaltea.uk to find out more. Till next time.